We will call the Civil Law and Data Practices Committee to order. I have minutes from yesterday, March 10th, 2015. Representative Vogel moves the minutes. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes, approving the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Minutes are adopted. The first order of business, did Mr. Gunther, he left the room? Okay, it's okay with you, Representative Odescroll. We're going to have Representative Gunther go first. He has a bill up in another committee as well. This has just one small little teeny portion in it that applies to our committee. So I will move House File 744. Let me see here. Where is it going? I move that Representative Gunther's House File 744 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections. Go ahead, Representative Gunther. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman of the committee. House File 744 is a Board of Accountancy bill. The first part of the bill revises the definition of a test to make Minnesota statute consistent with national standards. The second part of the element the bill raises the civil penalties amount from $2,000 to $5,000 for a person or a firm that violates an order, statute, or rule that the board has issued or is empowered to enforce. And there is not a new penalty nor a new enforcement, only changes in the amount. And with that, Madam Chairman, I have a testifier here that would be glad to give you a quick testimony.
Thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself with the tape, please. Tell us what organization you're with, and then you can proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Sharon Jensen. I'm with the Board of Accountancy, and I'll stand to answer your questions, but as Representative Gunther has stated, we're not seeking any new authority. We're only seeking to raise the amount of the authority that the board has, primarily as a deterrent. We haven't, we've seen a lot of more egregious cases in the recent years, and we feel that 2,000 limit is not much of a deterrent in today's economy, and are seeking to raise that to 5,000.
Thank you. Any questions from members regarding this change in statute that the bill has? Seeing none, all those in favor of
744.
House File 744 being referred to the Committee on GovOps and Elections. Please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The bill is on its way to GovOps. Thank you, Representative Gunther. Representative O'Driscoll. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and, let's see, we need to move. I move House File 1472 to be re-referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's also an author's amendment, the A1 amendment for 1472 that I would like to have as well.
Okay. Let's talk about that amendment. I will move the A1 amendment. Go ahead and explain it, please.
The A1 amendment basically provides a little bit more safe harbor information and protection. We think it just makes the bill a little bit stronger, and the parties who are advocating for this believe that will happen as well as a result of the amendment.
Thank you. All those in any discussion on the A1? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. To your bill, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. A couple of just housekeeping things on the bill. In the state of Minnesota, as the case in some states, we may have mortgage foreclosures. And what happens is we've got two different sides of the foreclosure sale that take place. The first side is what we call equitable redemption in the state of Minnesota, and then there's a sheriff sale. And after that, there's statutory redemption, which is a second chance for the defaulted borrower or mortgagor to redeem themselves and to keep ownership of the property. The bill this evening provides more conversation and clarification on the before the sheriff's sale or during equitable redemption. What may happen from time to time is an individual who is the borrower may want to get a payoff number from their lender on the property because they're engaged in a sale or maybe encumbered with liens, and we're trying to figure out how to undo the situation and to get the loan paid off and to get the lender made whole as a result of that prior to the sheriff's sale. We've been experiencing in Minnesota, and we actually had litigation, and so the parties got around the table and said, let's put something in statute that everyone knows and can have some clarification. So literally what this bill does is it says that when notified, the lender will need to, within 3 days, provide a payoff number or a reinstatement number if there's not going to be a full payoff. In other words, what's the cost to the borrower to get the mortgage back out of default? And that number just needs to be good for 7 days so that the parties have a chance to be able to consider that number and make decisions based on that. So, Madam Chair, that is literally the extent of the bill, and I have Tess Miller here as well to testify, and we've been working with legal aid, and they are not opposed to it, and the other interest groups, and some said they were going to be here in case the committee had questions. Otherwise, we know of no opposition to this bill. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Odoskal. Real quickly, if we could hear from the testifier, then we'll take member questions. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, my name is Tess Rice. I'm general counsel for the Minnesota Bankers Association. The MBA represents about 95% of the banks in Minnesota, from the smallest to the largest. This bill is something that we worked on with legal aid, with some help from the Bar Association, and we think it will provide some clarification in the law, both on postponement and on reinstatement.
All right, sounds good. Representative Poppy.
I'll pass, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other member questions? All right. Seeing none. House File 1472 is recommended to pass and as amended and be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
General Register. House File 307, Representative Fabian.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Poppy.
Have we killed a bill in this committee yet this year?
No.
I'm just asking.
Nothing north of Highway 2.
I nearly did.
It's an amendment.
Peace in the valley.
Representative Fabian, welcome to the committee. I promise you we won't kill your bill. And that's true. I guess I can't promise that. Representative Fabian, go ahead and explain your bill to... Oh, I guess we need to move it before the committee.
Yep.
I will move House File 307.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. And thank you, committee. Simply what the bill is, and some of you have heard this before, I had a constituent who talked to me about having been stopped in a minor traffic violation. The officer asked for proof of insurance, and the individual used their smartphone with the app to present that as proof of insurance. And the officer at that point said, well, you know, I don't take that, or it's not good enough. I don't know exactly what the verbiage was. Well, anyway, so they got cited then for not having proof of insurance as well as not wearing a seatbelt or whatever. So we had to go to the courthouse and get it cleared up, and did have proof, did have insurance, showed them the paper copy, and that was fine. In a subsequent conversation that I had with law enforcement, the officer that I was talking to said, well, that really should not have been the case. The officer should have taken that electronic proof. So what my bill is simply doing is in statute, as 37 other states have done, and you can see on your bill on line 1.13 and 1.14, we are expressly stating that insurance identification card means a card including an electronic format as provided in 65B.482 subdivision 1. And so that would make it an acceptable form of proof of identification if it's on your smartphone or your iPad. I did have the bill amended in previous committee. On page 2 at the bottom, you can see 24 or 2.24 The use of an electronic device to display proof of insurance does not constitute consent for a peace officer to access other contents of the electronic device. And then the other part of that is 2.26. It says if a person uses an electronic device to display proof of insurance, a peace officer is immune from liability for any damage to the device unless the peace officer does not exercise due care in handling the device.
Okay. It's not a way to get a new iPhone is what you're saying.
Yeah. Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I've asked Bob Johnson to just circle back for me as to how technically this is working between Section 169.791 and 65B.482. And exactly how it looks in statute, if you don't mind.
Sounds good. Mr. Johnson, go ahead.
Madam Chair and committee members, Bob Johnson and Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Representative Fabian has actually described it quite accurately. We actually passed a few years back this 65B.482 expressly authorizing electronic e-insurance ID cards. So I was surprised when I heard that a law enforcement officer, we didn't put it in Chapter 169, we put it in Chapter 65B, but auto insurers have been sending to their consumers who would like it for the last couple of years. So consumers in Minnesota have been getting these ID cards electronically, so I'm glad we're correcting and connecting the dots here and making sure that that's authorized in all the necessary places in the state insurance law. So we passed this a few years back, either Representative Hoppe or Representative Sanders were the chief author of the legislation when we passed it 2 years ago, I think it was, maybe three. So I think this is the necessary correction, and let's make sure the laws are all in tune together.
Very good. Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, I talked to you this a little early about this question that I had, and I see in the lines 2.4 to 2.8 deal with it a little bit. My question would be if somebody has this and they show the officer their phone, but they refuse to give the officer their phone, because what happens a lot of times when I was on the road, we'd stop a car and we noticed numerous one, two, sometimes three or four convictions for no insurance. And what we would do is we'd grab that piece of paper that they had, we'd go back to our squad car, call the insurance company up and find out, yeah, they bought insurance for 30 days, but that was 6 months ago. And so they actually don't have insurance, and they're using that insurance card that they bought 1 month worth of insurance to try to get by. What would happen if they refused to give the officer their phone so they could actually make that phone call?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the option to use electronic is purely voluntary. Nobody is requiring that you do that. You can still have the paper copy in your vehicle or wherever you carry that to make sure that you do have the proof of insurance there. As the person who is choosing to use the electronic device, you are choosing to use that. And from my perspective, I'm not an attorney. Representative Lesh, you maybe can help me. But, you know, that's the decision that I'm making to do that. And as a result of that, if I need to have proof of insurance that the officer can verify, I gotta give him my electronic device, whether it's my smartphone or my iPad or wherever that happens to be.
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. I just wanted to make sure the intent was that they would have to give that up to so the officer could verify.
Thank you. Any other member questions? Representative Lesh.
Sure. I think, you know, if you wanted to be technical about it, and if I was one of those people that rolled my window down 3 inches and showed my insurance card kind of thing, well, and forced the cop to get out a notepad and write it down, I imagine technically the driver would be within their rights to do that, and the cop would have to write it. It would be a pain, of course, but the statute says that you have to establish proof and show the image, and that's what you have to do. So as long as that were done, you know, you'd probably get an eye roll from the cop, but I'm sure, you know, Representative Johnson would probably accede that would probably work as well. It just makes it a little more difficult.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Any other member questions? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 307 be recommended to pass, or be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The bill is on its way to public safety. Thank you, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Oh, Representative Pinchel.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hoffman.
Have we killed a bill in this committee yet this year?
No, but I'm noticing another major flaw that as I noticed Representative Pinto approaching the table, that there are no treats.
Move to adjourn.
Representative Pinto, tomorrow is a new day.
Madam Chair, apparently it is. Yes, indeed. I guess I had not realized that the directive about treats extended to the second time that the bill was being heard. And so this is meaning the second committee. And so that's good. I have a sense of that. So, okay. All right. Okay.
If he's quick, that would be a treat.
Yeah, I'm going to make a run for a call for pizza right away. So.
Well, you know, we'll all be hungry in the morning, right?
Yes, got it. Understood, Madam Chair.
Yes. Madam Chair, move your bill if you'd like to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, I move House File 424. Actually, pardon me, I guess it's now Senate File. Is it
337.
337, pardon me. Senate File 337. And I guess it's to go to the General Register. I believe.
Where'd my notes go? I believe it is, but yes, it is.
Okay.
And my next question would be, why would you want to bring us a Senate file?
Madam Chair, I'll admit being so new that I sat down in my chair right there and I had the Senate file in the folder and I said, what is this thing doing here? And I had to have it explained to me that because of the fact that it did in fact pass the Senate. And I want to point out, passed the Senate unanimously. I think about a week and a half ago. Well, whatever the date is, they're March 4th, so actually just last week. So apparently that's why.
Very good.
So thank you.
To your bill, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this is, and members, this is a technical amendment to the provision relating to directory information. So directory information is... information is a term that's used under federal law, and the current law points to federal regulations as of 2007. This change that you'll see, members, to 2012 is reflecting a change in the federal regulations, simply conforming Minnesota law to conform to that date. It's not an ongoing connection to the date. It's not linking up as time goes by. It's simply to that date of 2012. And really what it does is it allows directory data to be disseminated to particular recipients for particular purposes. And the reason that the bill came to me in the first place was the St. Paul School District wanted to have library cards be able to be issued to students. And so I've got a representative from the St. Paul schools here who can provide a little more information about that, and I'll have some comments.
All right, sounds good. Go ahead and say your name for the tape and present your comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mary Gilbert, and I'm the legislative liaison for the St. Paul Public School. And as Representative Pinto pointed out, this came up when the district was looking at modeling the Nashville Limitless Library System, where the city library and the school district operate seamlessly for the purposes of using the library materials. They have one card. They deliver books three times a week. They share materials, and they make it accessible. When we looked at how we could do that with the St. Paul Public Library, we discovered that we needed to share addresses for the purposes of issuing library cards. School districts under the federal FERPA, which guides student data information, can determine what is directory information or not. And it can include the name, the grade, the address, the phone number, and other information, awards, activities, that type of thing. And it's generally considered information that, if it was shared, would not be harmful. And districts are kind of all over the map, as I've visited with members of the committee. Some folks who want to send out graduation letters can get access to the addresses, and some can't. And so we took a look at the update in the federal law that was permitted in 2012, and it allowed districts to have some limited sharing. So as long as we provided the notice of who we were going to share the information with and what the purpose was, and as always, if the parents have the option of opting out of that exchange, it's permitted. And so that's why we were looking at the update that was permitted under 2012. It would allow us to do that with the St. Paul Public Library without making the address information available to the general public.
Madam Chair, if I can, thank you. Just to add, when the school district came to me with this, I worked with Mr. Gehring to draft this language and received approval by the and support, as you'll see, from the Minnesota School Boards Association, Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and the State Bar Association as well. And so hopefully following whatever hazing you plan to apply, I can earn the support of this committee as well.
Thank you. Member questions? Seeing none, would you like to renew your motion?
I would, Madam Chair.
Representative Pinto renews his motion that Senate File 337 be recommended to the and be referred to the General Register.
Are we sure, Madam Chair?
Well, I ask you for discussion. All those in favor of re-referring Senate File 337 to the General Register, please signify by saying aye.
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 Post same sign. You're on your way to the General
Thank you,
Register.
Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank you, members.
And with
Treat
that,
to
members.
Follow. Madam Chair.
Yes.
So we're a week. Thank you, Madam Chair. We're a week before deadlines, and we got the meeting every night thing going on already. Are we taking care of it this week so we don't have to meet every night next week, or how's this going to go?
Representative Lesh, I believe we got a whole bunch more bills sent to our committee today. So it looks like we'll probably be meeting a few times next week in the evening as well.
Madam Chair.
And we're not meeting every night this week. It's just Tuesday and Wednesday.
I thought we were meeting three nights. Well, Madam Chair, do we really, really need to hear all those bills that are sent to us? Just for the record, Madam Chair,
yes,
I tried to be very discriminating last year. Mm-hmm. So just offering that as an option.
I will be discriminating as well.
Thank you,
yes,
Madam Chair.
Yes,
that,
I don't.
That is all.
You know, I know everybody will have multiple meetings probably to be at next week, and so I will use my best discretion as possible to not keep you here any more than we have to. Representative Hilstrom.
I was just going to suggest, after consulting with some of my colleagues, that maybe we have one really late night versus many short nights.
All right, I will take that into consideration.
Well, I think the rule says we have to be done by midnight. But.
I wouldn't want to be here that late. Anyway, we will see you bright and early in the morning. We'll try to get as much information to you as we can ahead of time so you can plan accordingly. With that, we're adjourned.